gentlemen, boys and girls, John Iadarola's video and okay, that was audio kind of died. My name's Brett Ehrlich. I'm taking over this show. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Problems.
This is great because none of those problems happened. John seems to have some. I'll just take over, John. It's fine. You take a nap.
It was bad timing for that. So I don't know how we fixed that, but welcome to the Damage Report, everybody. I'm John Iadarola, and there are no problems anywhere. Certainly not in here, not out there in the world. We're just going to be talking about fun stuff. I'm John, as I said, that's Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going?
It's going great. And I think we should take this opportunity for those of you with some kind of Final Cut slash Premiere slash After Effects to take the weird green screen that John had jump in there and replace it with something creative. And that's why we did that this morning. It's not that John's cable's probably a little loose or failing. It is that we wanted to challenge you, the viewer, to unleash your creative chops.
Yes. So I don't know to what extent my audio video working now, unfortunately, but obviously that was a rough start. And I apologize for that. It was unprofessional. And so I feel I need to do something unique to up the production value. How about special effects?
No, impossible.
How would that be? Look at what I have manifested with my thumbs up. You have to watch a Marvel movie to get effects like that most of the time.
If I were to kind of essentialize what TYT is all about, it's like fantastic things working against all odds, like the special effects of your thumbs up manifesting, but very fundamental things annoyingly breaking that we don't have control over.
Yeah, like all the time.
Dr. Richie's thunderstorms just knocking out power. We had this thing on the roof that melted.
That's probably going to be happening more and more. We're actually going to be talking about extreme heat later on.
There you go. Yep. There you go. Yeah.
Anyway, if you're on the podcast, by the way, Zoom, for some reason, only for me, is doing a digital thumbs up in case you didn't get the message when I do a thumbs up. Anyway, we have news to talk about that does not involve my tech setup. We're going to be talking about Joe Biden, what charges he might be facing, which he might be getting off scot-free from. Jenna Ellis, formerly big ally of Donald Trump and his movement to overturn the results of the 2020 election, has very much turned the corner on that. And Elon Musk actually facing some consequences for once for the insane things that he says. That's in the first hour, and there's more as well. But then in the aftermath, we've got the garbage people of the week. And I have a particularly garbage person. I can't wait to talk about this one. So that'll be coming up. And along the way, if you want to send in comments, tweets, super chats, get them read, and maybe even get a Blue Apron gift card for $100. You can send those in and we'll reply as we go. But with all that said, Brett, you ready to start the show?
Absolutely, John.
I thought you were going to do it, and then you didn't. So now I...
Whether I am or not, you've been more than fair.
Thank you. Okay, let's do this thing. Good news for Joe Biden, and at the same time, pretty bad news for Donald Trump, or at least enraging news. The special counsel's investigation into the Joe Biden section of the classified documents brouhaha of the past year is apparently winding down, and the report is expected to come out sometime in the next few months. But long before that, we already know, apparently, according to leaks from CNN, where this thing is going. And it is that it's going to be sharply critical of Biden and his allies' handling of classified documents, but it isn't going to result in a criminal case. So the expectation is that they are going to be criticized for having some of these documents and then willingly giving them back, but he is not going to be facing any charges for that. I had not thought about the Biden section of this quite a while, so I don't really know how surprised I should be. We've known for a long time that what they did is very different. Biden has maintained that nothing he did was illegal. It might have been, you know, accidental or whatever. But his lawyers notified the Justice Department once they found the documents, and there's every indication that they cooperated all along in the attempt to recover those documents. We have a couple of bits of the communication between the Biden team and the National Archives and the Justice Department. And so look at the tone that they strike. In terms of taking custody, Denny Papers, yes, we are prepared to facilitate whatever access you need to accomplish an era, taking custody of whatever materials it seems appropriate. Other correspondence includes things like at your convenience, and I can be reached anytime on my cell. So Look, if they were talking like that and then not giving the documents back, then that would be worth nothing. But there is no indication that they did anything other than try to be as accessible and helpful as possible. Obviously, on the Trump side, and that's sort of looming in the background of this, the stance is very different, up to and including right now, actually. And so it is possible that the report will go in a different direction, but there are a couple of sources implying that he will not be facing charges. Brett, what do you make of that?
I think this is just hilarious. It basically reinforces this idea that the reason Trump is getting in so much trouble for it is that when he realized he was wrong, he didn't just say that. Now, that posture that Trump takes, which is like, I've never done anything wrong in my entire life, really does benefit him when he does something kind of like morally bad, but not illegal, and then just denies that it's bad, says, I won't apologize. And then to his benefit, he just appears defiant in the face of naysayers. But in a legal scenario, this backfires so wildly, and he's trying to play the same card that he would play if it was just like an Access Hollywood moment, right? This is him trying to say that I am perfect. Everything I do is legally great, even though it's very obvious it's not. And when Biden himself was like, oh, documents, take them, I don't care. Biden actually did the right thing in that scenario. Trump did not, and Trump's gonna face the legal consequences, and Biden should not face the same legal consequences that Trump should.
Yeah, yeah, look, no matter what they did, no matter how big the differences are, and we'll go through the differences between the Biden team and the Trump team, Trump allies, Trump loyalists are gonna say that this is the deep state. This is like, and we'll get some of that from Trump, but like, we're not coming like swooping in at the end and trying to justify it. We, from the very beginning, we have been tracking the way that both of these groups have dealt with what they're being accused of, and it's been very different from the very beginning. I know a lot of you watching this have been watching from the beginning, so don't find this to be like super surprising. That said, there are others who are angry. So let's turn now to Donald Trump. Trump responded almost immediately to the leak that implied that Joe Biden will not be facing charges in the classified documents case, saying in full caps, wow, fake news CNN through a leak from the Department of Injustice has just reported that no charges will be filed in the much bigger than mine crooked Joe Biden documents case. We are living in a very corrupt country. And then we're not gonna play the video for this, but I like the second truth that he sends out that just says, unequal justice on the boxes hoax. But it's not a hoax. Like you both had boxes. Like the boxes are real. They're not made up. So the hoax part is weird. And why has he been so focused on the boxes for so long? Is it because he thinks that like, if he talks about the boxes, that you'll forget that the boxes are full of classified documents? Why isn't it the documents hoax? What is it about the boxes, Brett?
I can't believe you just glided right past the whole like Biden's is bigger than mine admission. I don't know if you saw in that truth, he's like Donald Trump that. On the record saying that Biden's is bigger than his. I can't believe it.
Much
not just bigger than him, much bigger than his.
Much
so,
bigger.
I mean, maybe the hands thing really does affect it. The all hands team. But yeah, so I think this is hilarious. I think that Trump, he loves the word hoax. He has so many hoaxes against him that I can't keep tabs on which one he's talking about in any given time. I think it would help if he said the toilet boxes hoax, because that's my favorite image of all of the Trump presidency is him sitting by the toilet reading classified documents. And so yeah, there's that. I think it's absolutely hilarious. And he needs to admit that, you know, he did something wrong, but he won't ever admit that he did anything wrong. And in this case, he could have eliminated one quarter of the federal indictments against him by just saying, like, take the boxes back and not making a big deal about any of it. If he just sent them back. Now, these trials are going to end up happening around Super Tuesday, essentially, March and in some cases May. And this is a very big liability for him that will absolutely backfire and negatively affect his campaign, because voters, just like the thing with voters last time, as they looked at Trump, they're like, this guy's just too much, man. And having this still swirling not to use more toilet imagery, is not a good look for him.
No, no. And I said that we would run through this. I know that, you know, new people enter, you know, paying attention to what's going on every day. So just a reminder, if you're coming at the tail end of this, after Donald Trump and Mar-a-Lago were raided, both Mike Pence and Joe Biden willingly, voluntarily reported that they had documents and they cooperated with the investigation to get them back. Okay. So that's what happened. Trump had to be hounded over the course of, I think, like 18 months, maybe 16 months. He hid documents. Even once they turned in some documents, he kept other documents that he knew that he had there. Reminder, by the way, they were like, he was talking to his lackeys about where they could hide them. They were like moving them from place to place, potentially putting them on planes and flying them to other places, storing them in the most buffoonish place, not a secure place, like next to a cherished Corvette. This is next to a toilet. Showing them off to randos, bragging about them during interviews. And even once he had been raided and turned them all back in, he still claims that they're his. And like, just like as a comparison, I once was in the mall, I was much younger, and I walked out of like, I don't know, Macy's or something. And I realized I was holding, I think, a bag of socks that I hadn't paid for. And I turned and ran back in, because I was worried I was going to get tackled by a security guard or something. That's Joe Biden. But imagine if they got video of me stealing the socks and then they called me and I sent back like, okay, fine, you got me. So I sent two of the socks back and then claimed on social media that the rest of the socks are mine. And then you find out that there's conversations of me talking to my friends about how I'm going to sneak the socks out. Like, it is a different scenario. So the outcome should 100% be different. This, there are some things that Trump did that are just straight illegal. And there are other things where it is his flaws, it is his deep-seated personality flaws that have caused his downfall, because he could have gotten out of it if he was just a stronger, more reasonable person.
Yeah, but the logic of his followers does not compute like responsible, good person as strong. They think you're weak and you're just giving in. But like, every reason Trump could have these documents is hilariously Trump. One is that he's gonna sell them, but there's no way he knows what they are. And I doubt he's gonna actually like sell these secrets. It's just he'd rather put his name on the box and put it on Fifth Avenue. The other thing is
been my position from the start, by the way. I agree. I did not buy that he was selling them on the black market or something. Yeah.
The other thing that I think is funny is that he just wants to have them because he thinks they're important. And he thinks like, I just have these cool things, like the way that some people collect stuff they don't know how to use, like they just have it. And then the third thing is like the reason that I have this lavender thing that you put on your bed, your pillow before you go to sleep. I got this at the Westin and it was one of those things that was just out. And I don't think they get mad at you if you steal it and take it home. It's just like a cool souvenir. I think he just thought they were souvenirs. And he, you know, next to the documents has like towels from the White House and stationery from the White House, a box of White House pens, just like a tourist. Yeah. And that's the Donald Trump.
I could buy that. Yeah. And by the way, if that is what he did, and I think that there's a good chance, some of it, I think he liked the idea that he had it as sort of like to a not blackmail material, but a lower level. Like, he liked the stuff that he had about like General Milley and stuff like that. I think it's a mix of those two things. But like, you got caught, so just give him back, man.
And it's also part of it is like when you've ever broken up with someone and kept like their sweatshirt, like they dumped you and you kept the sweatshirt so that they'd have to like come see you to get it back.
Yeah.
That's super pathetic. And I think that's kind of maybe part of subconsciously, at least Trump's ethos there.
It's the Costanza move, actually. Yeah. Anyway, dating myself. Okay. We're going to move to other. Really fast. I just want to let you know, because we talked about it earlier, I really gave my thoughts about the case, but David DePape, the 43-year-old conspiracy theorist who tried to murder Paul Pelosi, has been convicted, found guilty of assault and attempted kidnapping for hospitalizing Paul Pelosi and trying to kidnap Nancy Pelosi. Also now faces state charges of attempted murder. And so if found guilty of those, it's possible that he could be in jail for 50 years. We all obviously knew that he did it. This seems like a pretty open and shut case, unless you're a right winger and then you have to imply that there's something weird going on. Remember when there was this vicious act of political violence, and they spent months joking that it was some sort of like gay hookup or something. Remember that dark moment in American history? That was fun. But anyway, that's what happened. I don't really have a lot of thoughts about it, Brett, but you should know that he was found guilty.
Thank goodness Nancy wasn't there, or that man would be dead. She would just ruin him. Sorry. I want to thank everybody on Happy Half Hour who participated after the whole like Mark Wayne Mullen challenge for a fight. We did a battle royal and to see who would win a DC battle royal. If all the political figures fought, Nancy Pelosi, I thought would go farther because obviously DePape waited until she was gone before trying to assault the family. But the winner, I was hoping it would be Jamal Bowman or like Bernie Sanders with old man strength or some other folks that made it pretty far. But no, it was Charisse Davids because she's literally a mixed martial arts expert.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So everybody was like, I would love to give this bout to AOC right now, but she doesn't know mixed martial arts.
No, I don't. There's nothing about AOC to me that says like can throw down necessarily. She's brave. I don't think that she would like shy away from it, but I don't know if she's got a strong punch. That's all.
She's a bartender. Bartenders know how to handle stuff.
Former lawyer for Donald Trump, Jenna Ellis, has been in the news of the last week after it was found that she was cooperating, apparently quite enthusiastically, with the Georgia RICO election case that Trump and others are tied up in. So she's got all of that simmering in the background. But in the foreground this week is her growing feud with Donald Trump Jr. See, they're trading barbs over some insane things that Don Jr. has been saying. I want to play a little bit of a video of him so we can give you our response.
Laura Loomer's turned out to be a warrior for your dad. You pulled up the screen. I hope she's press secretary when you're. Listen, she's a bulldog, man. I'll say that. She gets after it. I'd love to see press secretary just to watch DC just explode. I mean, there's a couple people that you could put in positions like that. You know, we talk about like Mike Davis as attorney general, or one of those guys. Like, there's like you almost have to just put him in as interim, even just. Just to send that shot across the bow or the swamp, be like, you want to play?
He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars or something. He's just a wreck of a man. He's just like falling apart on camera. He's doing like a flop sweat version of our social breaks. That's what this 100 millionaire is doing with his time. But anyway, the stuff that he says substantively is pretty crazy. Not crazy enough that it couldn't be true, though, saying that Laura Loomer, literal crazy person, could be press secretary. And why not? If Trump got back in, is it really that much crazier than anything else Trump might do? But anyway, there are those fighting back against. So we're going to get to them. But first, Laura Loomer. Is not a fan of Jenna Ellis, had tweeted Jenna Ellis, who is such a waste of space that her own husband divorced her after only 2 months of marriage. Jesus, is actually chiming in on Trump's personnel decisions. I don't think the woman who is more loyal to a fast food drive-through than to Donald Trump has any right to talk about personal decisions. I honestly don't even know what that's a reference to. Jenna Ellis is going to hell, and she won't be saved as much as she likes to pretend she will be a Christian. She's a fake Christian. Disloyal harlots go to hell, Jenna. That is the person who could well be the next press secretary. But to be fair, we have to let Jenna Ellis respond to that. And we had reason to believe from the tapes that were released in Georgia that she is divorced herself from the Trump team. Well, she goes on to say, Don Jr.'s pick for press secretary is claiming I am a disloyal harlot and going to hell. No mention, though, of Jr.'s divorce, his girlfriend's divorce from Gavin Newsom, or the best Christian ever screwing a porn star while his third wife was pregnant. Apparently, true Christianity is not based on belief in Christ as Lord, but rather belief in Donald Trump as savior, king, and next president. Repent and trust the 27th dimension, dimensional chess, guys. Personnel picks will be better this time. So, look, I don't think that any of the things she references there, the fact that people have gotten divorced, whether it's her or Gavin Newsom or what, like, I don't care. That doesn't mean anything. But she does throw Trump himself under the bus for the Stormy Daniels thing. Oh, and I mean, look, she's going to go even harder against his movement, but I hadn't realized how big the rift was between them, that she is a serious Christian, right? She fully believes all that stuff. The stuff that she is referencing about Trump that proves that he is a fake Christian, she knew all that stuff when she was working for him, to be clear. Like, yeah, that's the hypocrisy that matters to me. All the stuff about their relationships means nothing to me. I don't care about that. But you followed the guy and supported the guy, even though you apparently knew that he had done those things that you consider to be so sinful.
This is Jenna Ellis you're talking about, right?
Jenna Ellis, yes.
So Jenna Ellis is doing the Trump thing to Trump, where it's like, I will be your friend as long as you benefit me. And as soon as you don't, I'm going to kick out and turn against you in ways that are in line with the sense of power I feel I have right now. And the sense of power that Jenna Ellis has right now is in her, she was either going to go to jail for a long time, but she took a guilty plea. And part of that guilty plea is to, at least give statements to the state in the case against the defendants. And one of them is Trump. So who knows if she's doing that? It seems like there's no love lost between these two. I love the Laura Loomer aspect of it. Like, Laura Loomer is such a whack job. She got banned from CPAC.
Yeah. Wow.
She's not she said that the Women's March was, a Nazi organization. Donald Trump Jr. to say, oh my God, we should do is just appoint just anyone to be secretary. Did you see his secretaries before? It was Spicer who just broke down before eyes, and Scaramucci, who had the job for 11 days. Like, you guys already did that. And the idea that you would value the position so little that you would put people in charge, or at least float ideas for attorney general, like Mike Davis. Mike Davis, who's a guy who said that you should, quote, arm up against, quote, the violent black underclass. And he was going to put his political opponents in, quote, the gulag. These are the things that you're doing. And you're wondering why normal middle-class Americans look at Donald Trump when they actually have to examine him. Not when they're like, you feel good right now about Biden. What about that other guy from the past? They say yes now, but when faced with real decisions and they're hearing people like Donald Trump's weird radioactive offspring say, we should put the arm up against the violent black, underclass, you're floating ideas like that. It will remind people pretty quickly that your group is not serious and you're insane. You're literally unhinged, or figuratively unhinged. It's a problem.
Yeah, 100%. I want to jump to just one more graphic. This is graphic 4. And so in this graphic, which we'll show in 1 sec, she's going to do two things. So she's going to do again what she did with Trump and Stormy Daniels, which is to attack Trump and his movement for something that was every bit as true when she was a part of the movement as it is now, but also remind all of you why simply because someone now hates the same person as you does not mean that they're on your side. She tweeted, MAGA doesn't care about the truth. They just want everyone to say what they want to hear. If they don't, they'll try to bully and intimidate you. They're leftists. What? They're leftists? What is that? I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. Words don't mean anything. She started the sentence by saying, MAGA doesn't care about the truth, or the tweet. And then she ended it with, the right-wing fascist movement are leftists. But they did all of that was true before. Like, yes, they just wanted to be told what they wanted to hear and all that. But that was true for years while you're working for them. So again, like, she could explain what it is that caused her to finally open her eyes and see the movement Trump for what it is. But she's not even doing that. She's just doing the about face.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Like, I don't know if you saw that the scene in Braveheart where like the Irishman shows up and he's like, I don't really care about you guys. I just like to kill the English. Like, that's Jenna Ellis right now. Like, I don't care. I'm crazy. I'm going to go after him right now.
It's a good character. It reminds me of like the Krasensteins, who went from like just like posting like hentai of Robert Mueller to all of a sudden they're just fanboys of Elon Musk. And like, you're not going to explain the transition a little bit? Like, why are you doing that? Okay. The idea that people would try to do something like that, I get. It's all a grift. The fact that it works is what I never understand. Anyway, with that said, we do have to take our first break, respond to some of your comments in there. And when we come back, Elon Musk suffering at least a few consequences from his support of an anti-Semitic tweet earlier this week. We'll have all that and more after this. Following his agreement with a shockingly anti-Semitic tweet earlier this week, Elon Musk is actually facing some consequences for his actions. If you're not familiar with the tweet, we're just going to briefly show you. It involves saying that Jewish communities push hatred against whites and that they don't get that blah, blah, blah replacement theory is going to ruin everything. It's just, it's a lot of stuff all at once. And to that, Rando's tweet, Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, said, "You have said the actual truth." He had to go out of his way to find the tweet of a person who isn't anybody. It's just a random person on Twitter and say, yes, Jewish people push dialectical hatred against whites. But anyway, some people are pushing for consequences. You have the co-founder of Facebook, Dustin Moskovitz, who called on him to step down, not just from Twitter, but from everything. Remember, he is the CEO of 6 different companies. Obviously, he's doing a lot of work every day and bringing value to those companies. I don't think that that's going to happen. But what has happened is that he has lost his opportunity to speak at the APEC summit that's going to be coming up. It's the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit. So they have decided not to bring him on to that. And one of his big longtime investors in Tesla, Ross Gerber, tweeted, getting a flood of messages from clients wanting out of Tesla and anything to do with Elon Musk. Many saying they're selling their cars as well. What is he doing to the Tesla brand? Ross Gerber also had, I believe it was a Model Y. Yes, and says that he's going to replace it with a Rivian, another electric vehicle. So I don't know exactly why it has taken this, like to this point for those people to grow concerned about Elon Musk and his state of mind, but maybe this will finally break through. We're going to have more from that investor in a sec, but Brett, what do you make of this? I never got your initial thoughts about him and his tweet.
It's pretty amazing to me. I really love Elon Musk just deciding it's cool to wait in on this and then seeing how many people still are like, this guy's genius. This guy's brilliant. And it's still the same people that are all like the do your research crowd that don't do like a single lick of research into any of the claims being made. I love that it's like this dialectical hatred against whites that they claim to want people to stop using against them. Just like decoding that. When you see terms like dialectical hatred against whites, that is like the douchebag in your philosophy class explicitly referencing one school of subthought within whatever chapter they're all reading that he's going to forget about in 2 weeks. Like that is insider lingoism, to kind of borrow the way that they talk. That's lingoism as a way to kind of tip your hat to, figurative tribalism within the internet. So you are just talking to people there. And for me, you're not responsible necessarily for what everybody else says to your ideas, but it is a good indicator of who you're hanging out with. There are so many explicitly hateful anti-Semitic tweets and memes following this interaction. And if you're Elon Musk, maybe you would take a second to just step back and be like, whoa, 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 hold on a second. And like, I think all of this talk at a certain point just gets super victim-y for absolutely no reason. Like Elon Musk being like, oh my God, it sucks that I'm such a victim in this situation. And oh, you guys need to know that you're a victim. It's like, there's no ideas being exchanged at that point anyway. It's just people trying to get you to feel bad for them. And it's useless. And it's exactly the same kind of uselessness that's actually better if you take that same energy and put it toward like finding fun cat videos on the internet or like finding an actual community of people that play pickleball with you. Just go do that instead.
And with the resources he has, you could input literally any activity and he could do it. No. So really, guys, pretty clear. But just to be clear, you find his tweet to be in the realm of as unacceptable as the way I've portrayed it. I never know where we're going to disagree.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It's just stupid. It's like, and then, I mean, I could get into the, like, against, quote, whites. It's like, anytime you talk about whites, just know that that's like, that's a Venn diagram that grows and shrinks based on what you're trying to argue for at the time. Like, and that goes all the way back to, like, Ben Franklin saying that Germans weren't white. Like, it's just like, so often that thing just disappears and turns into mush. And then people will tell you that Jews are all white, but unless they want to kill them. And then it's like the white Jew, they completely ignore the fact that there's all kinds of Jewish people and there's colorism within the Jewish community as well. Like, we can get into all that, but no one really wants to, right? You don't want to do that. You just want to say yes, like, and subscribe and give money to my grift. Like, that's all people want anyway. So I don't know if I need to dignify the rest of that conversation with like facts amid the stupidity.
Okay. I like it. Okay. Why don't we jump to, I promised that we'd get to the video. So really fast, let's go to the Ross Gerber criticizing Musk and let's see what he has to say.
The things he says matters, but what he's really doing is destroying everything he's built. And that's the super frustrating thing as a shareholder. And just as an investor, one has to look out at the long-term future of Tesla and say, if the CEO is willing to do all this stuff and nobody can stop him, founder, whatever you want to call him, well, what's going to happen to Tesla over the next 10 years? Are they going to achieve their mission if the CEO isn't actually the CEO? Because he's certainly not acting as the CEO of Tesla.
Yeah, look, the idea that he is actually the CEO of all of these companies is just ridiculous. He cannot spend his day replying to rando anti-Semites on Twitter and then have us believe that he's also designing rockets, which of course he was never doing, but he's just a figurehead. That's all. And at one point, back before we knew much about his politics, maybe that was a benefit. He's able to draw attention, he can raise money and all that. But at some point, if you're doing nothing substantive for the company and all you are is a figurehead and you're awful and people hate you, then why should you continue as a figurehead? Like, I personally, I'm not in charge of a company or whatever, but like, I have to imagine that he is substantially hurting Tesla. I would not buy a Tesla now. But if they were to get rid of him and deal with some of their production issues and everything, I might consider it. And I also think, like, imagine, why isn't someone swooping in to try to buy Twitter right now? It's worth way less than it was, but it would definitely be worth more instantly if he was no longer in charge. Think about if someone took over, even someone awful, like someone that people don't like, and it was no longer Elon Musk. Think about how much your evaluation of Twitter would instantly improve and how much you'd want to use it in by comparison.
So who are you though in this? So let me give you some statistics. The overall traffic on Twitter is down somewhere between 15 and 20%. I think 15%. It's down all the places. It's down the most in the USA. And the valuation of Twitter, as many people have reported, has gone from $49 billion when he bought it to his own quantification when he had to value it at $19 billion, saying that he lost $30 billion off. The only tangible statistic that has risen with Elon Musk in charge of it, besides hate speech, is the overall traffic to Elon Musk's own tweets, which is up 100%. So with all of this, it proves that it's just his toy. He just bought it to be a toy. Everything else is immaterial. Generally, when it comes to valuing internet companies, it's so wishy-washy anyway that I do think a lot of this is just the bad PR around it. But when you're talking about some of the decisions you have to make when you run an internet company is like, who do I want my user base to be? And some companies like Facebook say, I want my user, and Google, I want my user base to be everybody. Elon Musk is saying he wants his user base to be everybody, but the only user base he actually wants is people who like him. And so you can get value out of that when it's all one type of user, because you tell all the advertisers, if you want to reach that one type of user, come on over here. Also, we prove that those users, the super users, the value users, are the ones who are stupid enough to give me $8 a month so they can get a blue check mark. So occasionally I can go in there and like fan the flames of their anti-Semitic tweet nonsense.
Yeah.
That's my take on Elon Musk running Twitter.
I mean, yeah. The question is, like, it is clear that he is personally using it as a toy. The follow-up question to be, since he did not buy it with his own money, why are all of the other people involved in this cool with that?
What else are they going to do?
There's also the theory that he bought it to ruin it, effectively, that it was a tool that could be used by non-fascists to effectuate social and political change, and they don't want that, so they bought it to ruin it. I think it's a pretty good theory. But anyway, okay, I just briefly want to mention this before we close this out. A lot of people have noticed that there are ads, like some corporations have started advertising once again, despite what a hellhole it's become. IBM has paused advertising, paused, not ended, bear in mind. After a report that Twitter's ads for that company were being placed next to anti-Semitic comments, you can see right here an example of it. Media Matters had done a report about a number of companies that are continuing to advertise. And of course, Media Matters both publicizes awful comments and puts pressure on advertisers to try to get them to do something about it. In response to this, Elon Musk replied, "Media Matters is an evil organization." You're the dude agreeing with anti-Semites and people talking about replacement theory. Like, they just publicize what you say. You know who else publicizes what you say? You, because you tweeted it. Like, if you didn't want to stand by it, if you didn't want corporations to make decisions based on what you were saying, don't say it. Okay, be responsible. You're a big boy, or at least you should be at this point. So he hates Media Matters. They always lash out when Media Matters just lets people know the terrible things that they've said. Okay, quick final point, Brett.
Yeah, with all the douchebags and horrible people saying douchebaggy and horrible things on X, instead of changing it from Twitter to X, he might as well have started calling it Elon's Mojo Dojo Casa House.
I would have found that slightly more endearing. Anyway, okay. By the way, I love that people pointed out, like, he changed the logo to an X. And with his recent tweets, it seems like if it evolved a bit more, it might be more representative of the content on the site.
You just need some arms on those X's.
Just a few little growths. But anyway, we'll see what happens. Okay, we have to take our second break. I think there's more to get to after this. Is caring about climate change, caring about the fate of our planet, a luxury that we can ill afford? We'll debate that after this. I understand the idea of trying to separate an art from the artist, but there is so much art that you don't have to do that. Like, you can buy a different album, you know? Like,
that's such a weird
I still watch Lethal Weapon. I don't know this, but
I don't know the way in which, like, all those companies are contributing to the deaths of Palestinians, the ones that people are boycotting. So I have not looked into it. And I will, I promise you, I will. But in the meantime, when I saw that, like, divest from Burger King and, Tang and Fanta, I was just like, I just picture everyone in a circle, even the mascots around, just like slamming Orange Squirt and just being like, let's kill everybody. Like, how does it work? Is that who caters the war room, or is it? Is like Colonel Sanders in charge of the War Bureau?
That's a funny image, but
I know this is horrible, but it's like, you know, those moments where, like, it's a really powerful message to be taken seriously, but that intrusive thought just jumps in your mind.
I get the concept.
It's just, it's finger licking good. And then they push the nuclear button with it. Like,
Brett, I am going to drive to your house and I'm going to kill you. You have to stop. Anyway, we will get to more comments soon. First, the news, starting with this.
Given the world situation we face now, with threats coming from multiple directions, climate change is a distraction. Worrying about climate change is almost a luxury.
Yeah, but is it for a lot of people? Is it a luxury to worry about a thing that is going to drastically affect your ability to live where you live, work where you work, grow food, literally just survive? Look, we've heard things like this for a long time coming from people like, is that Brett Hume?
Brett Hume.
For Hume, yeah. Their arguments have not evolved. In fact, I think that they're stupider than they've ever been. Telling people that it's a luxury when they're baking in the streets is insane and insulting. It's condescending. There was another person, Fox Business, I believe earlier today, saying that how would we even know about climate change? It's not like it can be measured.
Like, I think that's it can dumb.
I think it can be measured.
That's dumb, but I would argue that he's right. It is a luxury to be able to, in certain situations, worry about climate change. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. Like what he's talking about, he's trying to message and completely neutralize the good ideas in it with this message that seems acceptable. It's a common thing. It's Donald Trump does it all the time. It's like, what's this water cooler word phrase I can say to get people to be like, oh, let me just disregard it together. And yes, when you have a gas stove, and someone's like, you need to do an electric stove or you need to do an electric oven. And one of those, and you can't buy this car. You need to buy that car that's more expensive or else you're evil. That's what he's talking about. And that's a problem we need to solve. But we still need to solve it. And yes, don't call me an evil bastard for bringing it up.
Okay, you're an evil bastard for different reasons than that. And again, a reminder, even though I think we're out of that issue, nobody was saying that everybody needs to replace their gas stoves with electric stoves, just that in new construction, perhaps we could do the electric stoves.
Right. And I was just trying to think of that. And I don't even, that wasn't even completely analogous. I was just trying to grab something they've said in their silly arguments.
Exactly. Yes. And again, it should not be a thing that people need to do themselves. There are far bigger structures that should be leading the way on this. But as a reminder of why this is not just a luxury, that this will be core to the experience of literally billions of people, heat-related deaths are apparently on track to rise 370% by mid-century. And mid-century ain't as far away as it used to be, by the way. Just to give you an idea of how bad it is right now, this is not in 2050, this is right now. People last year were exposed to, on average, 86 days of health-threatening high temperatures. Vulnerable groups, including older people and infants, faced twice as many heat wave days this decade compared to just 20 years ago. And heat deaths have already been steadily climbing. The study found heat-related deaths for U.S. adults aged 65 and older increased by 88% in 2018 to 2022 compared to 2000 and 2004. Maricopa County this summer shattered its record for heat deaths. I mean, you all might remember people getting like second-degree burns from falling on pavement and infrastructure literally melting. Again, I would classify this as the exact opposite of a luxury, something that is an existential threat, not just to our human fleshy bodies, but like the stuff that makes our society run. So maybe he could provide a little bit of balance in that way. Not expecting it. Brett, what do you think?
Yeah, and that is, it's not a luxury if we're trying to prevent the deaths. Like that's not a luxury versus non-luxury conversation. That is a real problem that we really need to find a solution toward. And what ends up happening along the way is like these corporations and a lot of these bad actors. So some corporations end up embracing the message, right? So they'll say like, oh, we do need to fix climate change. So you should buy these light bulbs that I make. And sure, that's the thing. But as John says, you should probably have a better idea to like incorporate environmentally responsible practices into the construction of your high rise. And on an industrial level, the things that we don't deal with, like, so for example, like Clorox, the company that makes Clorox makes cleaning products for your house that you can buy and they sell them at Target. But that is a tiny fraction of their overall business that they do. The bigger business that they do is industrial level cleaning products. So they sell vats and vats of cleaning materials to bigger companies that do that. They should make those more environmentally responsible. And that, like, if you ever, and here's a great case, which is a fascinating case, Method, which you see in Target, right? Method exists because of that. The founder of that company was like, when you go toe to toe with a major corporation that either has to make a giant change to their infrastructure for their like big industrial scale vendors, you can kind of be the person who's more environmentally friendly in that scenario. They might throw you some bones, but they're not going to change that big ass infrastructure that they have. And that goes for everything. That's why there's targets for major auto manufacturers to get all of their stuff to be compliant, rather than just telling you you should buy a Prius instead of a Corolla.
Yeah. 100%. That was reasonable and nuanced. Weirdly enough, Fox News was not on this issue. By the way, super fast, the US and China following Biden's recent meeting with Xi Jinping, they are pledging to do increased drawdown of carbon emissions. China had previously been incredibly resistant to setting specific goals. They are doing that now. We will see what ends up happening in that. But I guess at least there's a little bit of diplomacy in this area. Senator Tom Cotton is blasting the Biden administration, not on the border or Ukraine or Israel, but on menthol cigarettes and his attempt to target black smokers in what would seem to me to be an AI-generated tweet. Senator Tom Cotton tweeted, "Joe Biden wants to ban menthol cigarettes, which are favored by black smokers. Meanwhile, he wants to legalize weed for white college kids and mail out free crack pipes. The administration's ban is paternalistic, it's hypocritical, and it creates a huge black market for Mexican cartels and Hezbollah, and all because Mike Bloomberg told him to." This just had like ChatGPT meets Mad Libs energy. There's just so much going on there. There's definitely racism going on. There's a little bit of that. Now, the truth of this is that back in October, the Food and Drug Administration was, quote, poised to move forward with a long-awaited ban on menthol cigarettes, a move hailed by public health groups who say it will especially improve the health of black communities and prevent young people from taking up smoking. Research showed that, yes, indeed, menthol cigarettes are not consumed at the same rates amongst all racial groups. That's true. And that's the truth for not just the menthol cigarettes, but other things that the FDA is going to be regulating. Black high school students are 1.5 times more likely than white high school students to smoke cigars. But then he tries to balance it by saying that the weed stuff is only going to benefit white college kids. But that's not, there's no racial difference. Wouldn't everyone benefit from this? And what the hell is with the crack pipes? Brett, what do you think?
I think it's racist.
I think it might be.
No. Taking menthol cigarettes away is racist. Mm-hmm. Straight up. We're all suffering until we die. It's mean to say, do you think the only reason people are smoking menthol cigarettes is because they taste like mints? Everybody would just be eating mints if they wanted mints. It's the tobacco. Why would you leave the gross tobacco and make the tasty tobacco illegal? You should also eliminate the tasty alcoholic beverages and just leave gin.
No, don't do that.
It is so aggressive to black smokers. It is so hateful to black smokers to take away one of the joys in life from them.
Again, it's in comparison. By the way, I'm not even in support of Flint's.
Racist. A lot more black smokers in taking away the cigarettes.
I don't think that's what they're trying to do. Again, I don't support the ban. I do think that you can do things that, there are taxes and things like that. There's certainly education campaigns. They are more damaging because menthol cigarettes, when they are smoked, tend to be smoked more deeply and more often. Studies have shown that people who smoke menthol cigarettes far more than people who smoke regular ones. And why wouldn't they?
The other cigarettes are healthy.
No, they're comparatively healthy because it's an unhealthy thing that you do less of.
Right.
Again, but anyway, this to me is a thing where Tom Cotton, Republican senator, is using this as an opportunity to imply.
Who is, you're cutting out, but Tom Cotton, whose overall look just looks like a racism of a cartoon, not to mention his last name, which sounds like it was also written by someone to sound more racist, is pretending to be friend of all people. That's the problem. Sorry, John, I stepped in because you You were.
No, I am apparently glitchy. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna end our first hour, which is just about to end anyway. I'm gonna try to reconnect. Hopefully it'll be smoother for the aftermath. Thank you everybody who's been, you know, listening like in the podcast just to this first hour. But there is more to come in the aftermath, including our garbage people of the week. We'll see you in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.